The Republican Party, commonly referred to as the GOP for Grand Old Party, is named after republicanism, the dominant value during the American Revolution. Founded by anti-slavery activists, economic modernizers, ex-Whigs, and ex-Free Soilers in 1854, the Republicans dominated politics nationally and in the majority of northern states for most of the period between 1860 and 1832. The party has won 24 of the last 40 U.S. presidential elections, and there have been a total of 19 Republican presidents, the most from any one party. The first was 16th President Abraham Lincoln, who served from 1861 to 1865, and the most recent being the 45th and current president, who took office on January 20th, 2017. The Republican Party's current ideology is American conservatism. Its platform involves support for free market capitalism, free enterprise, fiscal conservatism, a strong national defense, deregulation, and restrictions on labor unions. In addition to advocating for conservative economic policies, the Republican Party is socially conservative and seeks to uphold traditional values based largely on conservative Christian ethics. The GOP was strongly committed to protectionism and tariffs from its founding until the 1930s, when it was based in the industrial Northeast and Midwest. Since 1952, there's been a reversal against protectionism. In 1964, the National GOP allied itself with white Southerners who resisted the civil rights movement. Republicans chose as their presidential candidate Barry Goldwater, who voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. They also decisively rejected the Eastern Republicans who had supported it. Since then, the GOP has become more white, more Southern, more evangelical, and more resistant to the emerging multicultural and multiracial United States. In every situation, the Republican Party supports the old hierarchies. Why not come out on a limb with me? The clouds of hurricanes Harvey and Irma had silver linings. To be sure, these two powerful storms brought terrible destruction and loss of life. These two powerful storms displaced and financially crippled many people. And hurricanes Harvey and Irma brought us together, too. After many months, if not years, of ideological differences and political rancor, the silver lining of these two hurricanes was national unity, even if only temporary. In the wake of these storms, we focused for almost two full weeks on the plight of our fellow humans along the Gulf Coast and in the Caribbean. For almost 2 weeks, we forgot our divisions. We did not care if the people suffering were black or brown or white. We did not care if they were male or female, young or old, gay or straight. We did not care if they were citizens of this country or immigrants from somewhere else. For almost 2 weeks, we did not care if those in misery were Democrats or Republicans or something else entirely. And it appears that our elected representatives did not care either. I was moved during the storms to see the eagerness with which elected officials, from mayors and local city council members to U.S. senators and House members, who reached across political divisions to help people. Hurricanes Harvey and Irma brought out the best in us. Just last week, this church raised over $18,000 for Hurricane Harvey relief. And soon it will have a chance to give to those who lost so much during Hurricane Irma. These storms brought us together as a nation. If only we could find as much compassion and goodwill amid the political storms that rage all around us. Now, I don't have to tell you that people in our country are at each other's throats much of the time. You see it as I do it everywhere I go. Over the course of the last few decades, seeds of hatred and division sown by greedy, bigoted men have grown into the jungle of nastiness we find ourselves living in today. We find our nation at a raw, unhappy turning point. I've said from this pulpit before that I think that we are currently in the third wave of the civil rights movement, the first wave occurring after the Civil War and the second during the 1960s. What is different this time is that this wave of the civil rights movement goes beyond fair treatment for African Americans. This wave of the civil rights movement includes all people of color living in the United States. This wave finds the half of the U.S. population who is not white asking those of us who are, why do you get so much and we must get so little? Why have you let systems of white supremacy dominate for so long? And the great fault of liberalism is that it says to people of color, you deserve more. And then white liberals continue with business as usual in a system where white people almost always win. I see you are hurting, we say, but don't ask me to sacrifice my lifestyle to make your life better. In this sense, we liberals need a course correction too. We need to return to the small R Republican values our country was founded on. We need to reengage in a form of civic virtue that controls our selfishness and encourages good citizenship in others. As much as we liberals like to point fingers at the Republican Party, we too have greatly violated the words of our opening hymn that command us to confirm thy soul in self-control, thy liberty in law. The dream of the righteous republic is the dream of a free people governing themselves for the common good, writes Philip Gorski, professor of sociology and religious studies at Yale University. He continues, the Puritans imagined it as a city upon a hill knit together by Christian charity. The founders envisioned it as a Christian republic modeled on its Hebrew and Roman predecessors. Abraham Lincoln spoke of a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Jane Addams dreamed that democracy would pervade the American way of life. Martin Luther King Jr.'s preferred metaphor was the beloved community. The notion of the righteous republic is an attempt to translate these dreams into the present era, he says. A righteous republic is based on a certain vision of the common good, and not just any vision, but a vision that draws deeply on prophetic religion. That is what makes it righteous rather than just moral. Now, nowhere in this dream of the righteous republic are there provisions for one group to lord their citizenship over another. Nowhere in this dream of the righteous republic are white people superior to people of color. Nowhere in this dream of the righteous republic are the wealthy more deserving than the poor. This righteous republic does not care where your ancestors came from. It does not care what religion you practice or if you practice religion at all. This righteous republic does not care whom you love or what your family looks like. It cares about one thing and one thing only. This righteous republic insists that you engage with it in a civic and civil manner. It calls upon us to see every person, to see everyone as a person among people, and to see our country as a nation among nations. This is the ideal. This is the goal. This is the measure of civic virtue. And just as we fall short in life, we often fall short in civic virtue too. We too often let our own selfishness and greed lead us into thinking that we are better than others. Too often we resort to name-calling and unfriending when a vow to stay in the conversation would be much more fruitful. The small R Republican tradition has fallen prey to a corrupting influence, viciousness, writes Philip Gorski. By viciousness, I mean the opposite of virtuousness, especially the civic kind, he continues. There's no way around it. Civic virtue is morally demanding. It involves self-discipline and self-sacrifice. The American founders rightly worried that the Republican vision might be too demanding for the citizens of the young nation. What sort of government shall we have? Benjamin Franklin was reportedly asked at the Constitutional Convention. A republic, if you can keep it, he warned. Now, I hadn't really thought about viciousness and virtuousness being two sides of the same coin, but it makes some sense. We often think of virtuousness as prim. We see it as sanctimonious or holier than thou, something a preacher might say from a pulpit, for instance. But in the political context, virtuousness means choosing to see the good in others. Virtuousness remembers the higher good. It asks us to lift our gaze to something better. Viciousness, on the other hand, delights in stirring things up. It thrives on harsh words and images forwarded thousands of times on social media. I know your Facebook feed has some of them in it. Viciousness is always looking for a fight. It will seize upon the smallest of divisions and claw it into an open wound. No wonder Franklin could see how keeping a republic together would be a challenge. A republic's citizenry must lean toward virtuousness to make it work. And this is another place that we liberals could lift up the values of small our republicanism more. We could actually broaden the political playing field rather than siding with sanctimoniousness parading as political correctness. If we could temper our reactivity, if we could temper our reactivity, we could do the conversation a lot of good. Now, there are reasons we Unitarian Universalists ground ourselves in our principles. As a theologically diverse faith, we need common ground. We need to be able to see where we agree. As Reverend Tom Shade put it in the UU World, written in 1985, the seven principles were a positive statement of what we were striving for, and not just what we were against. Whatever anyone wants to say about the seven principles, he says, they are a positive statement. They are relentlessly positive and sunny. They describe the world we want to live in and the congregations that we want to belong to. I think particularly of our third principle. We covenant to affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Now, while it's a little bit ambiguous whether the acceptance of one another extends beyond our fellow congregants or not, I would hope that it would at least include all of our fellow congregants. A recent Pew Center survey found that some 14% of Unitarian Universalists are not Democrats. This is where you gasp. I would never have imagined that it was that high. Now, of course, not all 14% are Republicans, but a good portion are. So think about that for a minute. Might our own acceptance of our own UU Republicans be a door through which we might find equally thoughtful Republicans out in the wider world? Might our own political diversity lead us to hear more sides in a wider conversation? Remember, small R Republicanism does not care if your voter registration card says Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, or Green. Small R Republicanism cares that you have a voter registration card and that you use it every chance you get. Let America be America again, wrote Langston Hughes. Let it be the dream that used to be. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has yet been and yet must be. America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be. This poet, black and gay and American, gets to the very heart of the matter, and quite quickly. America is not the America it was dreamed to be. It may never fully realize that dream. An America that cannot make room for Langston Hughes cannot properly call itself a republic. But an America that can ask forgiveness for its sins, sincerely ask forgiveness for its sins, the sins of killing its native peoples and enslaving its black ones, this America can become America again. An America that can say to women and sexual minorities and non-Christians, we see you. That America can become America again. An America that can care for the downtrodden, nurture children, respect elders, and welcome difference, that America can become America again. You and I must be as bold and clear as Langston Hughes. Rather than shrinking from our duty, we must engage in civic life and civic virtue. This does not mean we give up our opinions and ideals, just the opposite. Because we have opinions and ideals, we must be willing to engage in public discourse. We will win some arguments, and we will lose others. But apathy is the greatest threat to small R Republicanism, and it requires us to engage. It requires us to care. It requires us to act. Now, I am the lone Democrat in my big R Republican family. And I just know that I'm going to lose every single political argument. But you see, the argument is so much better for having a Democrat in it. By speaking up, I make more space in my own family for the same small R Republican values that we all hold. And it is this civic space that ultimately matters. May there be civic space here at First Parish in Concord. May there be civic space in the Unitarian Universalist Association. May there be civic space in our neighborhoods. May there be civic space in our families. May there be civic space throughout our country. So be it. Amen.